And just a reminder, if you are able to, we do have a 9 o'clock service also. If you're able to come a little bit earlier to create more space for the 10:45, just to throw that out there, that you're welcome to come and join us. We have a lot of space at the 9 o'clock, and it'd be great to have some more people coming to that service. Okay, so today we are going to finish up our series. We've been talking for the last couple of months about accepting the unacceptable. Those things that happen in our lives that shouldn't happen, right? When unacceptable things happen to us, and many times we try to fix them, we try to change them, and sometimes we can't because there are some things that are completely outside of our control. And if you remember way, way back to the first time we talked about this, when we were all parked outside there and we first talked about this, we looked at the Serenity Prayer. And we talked about the most recognizable part of that prayer that most people are familiar with: God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Today I want to talk about the second half of that prayer that talks about courage to change the things that I can and should change. We spent a couple months now talking about the first half, those things that we accept because we can't change them. But today I want to talk about the fact that there is a time to do something. There is a time to change something that needs to be changed. See, the point of the series is not that when bad things happen, we should never fight back, we should never try to change it, never try to fix it, we should just accept every bad thing as that's just the way my life is. That's not the point of the series. The point of the series is that sometimes we need to acknowledge this is bad and I don't like it, but I can't change it. But at the same time, there is a time to step in and to do something and to change something that really needs to be changed. There's a well-known passage in the Old Testament, Ecclesiastes chapter 3. And here's a couple of verses from that passage. Here's some of what Solomon tells us. For everything, there is a season, a time for every activity under heaven, a time to cry and a time to laugh, a time to grieve and a time to dance, a time to search and a time to quit searching, a time for war and a time for peace. There is a time to make peace with something bad that has happened in our lives. And there's a time to go to war to change it. Today, I want us to look at this great story from the life of David where he is faced with the unacceptable. And instead of accepting it, he goes to war to change it. It's in 1 Samuel chapter 30. This is about 10, 12 years after David versus Goliath. At this point in his life, he's in his late 20s, early 30s, and Saul is still the king of Israel. David is a national hero, but he's forced to live as a fugitive on the run for his life because of Saul's jealousy. And to this point, David has seen a lot of battles. He's won a lot of battles, has a lot of victories behind him. And he and his men come home one day to find something absolutely devastating. 1 Samuel chapter 30, starting in verse 1, here's what it says. 3 days later, when David and his men arrived home at their town of Ziklag, they found that the Amalekites had made a raid into the Negev and Ziklag. They had crushed Ziklag and burned it to the ground. Now, putting all those weird names aside, basically what happens is they come back home and their entire town has been destroyed. Every home has been burned to the ground. There's nothing left but rubble. It's gone. And to make things worse, it goes on to say this: they had carried off the women and children and everyone else, but without killing anyone. When David and his men saw the ruins and realized what had happened to their families, they wept until they could weep no more. Just imagine coming back to your home and finding that not only your house, but your entire neighborhood has been destroyed. Every home has been burned to the ground, everything reduced to rubble, there is nothing left. And on top of that, your family has been kidnapped. They have been taken by a group of people who are best known for their brutality. And these men who are with David, these are battle-hardened warriors, right? These are not guys that sat around the campfire holding hands and sharing their deepest, darkest feelings. These are tough guys, right? And it says they wept until they could weep no more. Have you ever cried so hard you had nothing left inside? You had literally no strength left because the grief was overwhelming. Some of you sadly have been through that. And that's what these men are going through at this moment. They are terrified because their wives, their daughters, their sons have been taken. by a group of brutal and evil men, and they know what's going to happen to their loved ones if they don't do something. For David, it actually gets worse. Take a look at what happens in verse 6. It says, David was now in great danger because all his men were very bitter about losing their sons and daughters, and they began to talk of stoning him. This is one of those things that often happens when bad things happen in our lives and we can't fix it, we can't explain it. What we tend to do is we look for someone to blame for what happened. Sometimes we blame God. God, how could you let this happen to me? You could have kept this from happening, but you didn't. Why not? Sometimes we blame other people in our lives. Sometimes we blame ourselves. And we do that what if thing where we say, if only I had been there sooner, if only I'd left earlier, if I had said this, if I had done this, if I hadn't said this or done that. And we do the second guessing. When bad things happen and we don't have answers, we usually look for someone to blame. And that's what's happening here. And just put yourself in David's shoes, because he's lost family members too. He has family members who have been taken by these men too. His home has been destroyed too. He's fighting his own battle. He's mourning his own loss. And now these men who he has depended on for so long, they've been loyal to him. They were with him when, with all of the stuff with Saul chasing him down and wanting to put him to death and David running for his life. These men have fought by his side. They've sacrificed a lot and they have been loyal to him through all of this. And now those very men are turning on him and talking about stoning him to death to vent their grief. What do you do when you're in the middle of something like that? When you're mourning your own loss, when you're going through your own grief and difficulty, and those you depend on, they turn against you. How do you handle that? Well, here's what David does. Look at the next part of verse 6. It says, but David strengthened himself in the Lord his God. This is the turning point in this story. Up to now, everything has been really bad. And this is where everything turns around and it completely changes. David strengthened himself in the Lord. The big question for us is, what exactly does that mean? Because that might be helpful for us to know when we're going through difficulty. How do we do that? What does it mean to strengthen yourself in the Lord? So I did some digging, and here's what I found out. The word that's used here when it says David strengthened himself, the word for strengthen literally means to fasten on to something. To bind yourself to something. It means to grab hold of something stubbornly, tenaciously, and to refuse to let go. In other words, when it says David strengthened himself in the Lord, what it's saying is this: David grabbed hold of God, fastened himself to God, and said, I will not let go. I'm holding on to God no matter what happens. Centuries later, in John 15, Jesus would say it this way: abide in me. He said, I am the vine and you are the branches. Just like a branch is fastened to a vine, it's attached to it, it's not letting go, and it draws life and strength from that vine. That is the relationship God invites us into. Not a distant God who doesn't know us and doesn't care about us, but a God who is a loving Father who invites us to fasten on to him, to hold on to him for dear life and not let go. And that's what David is doing here. He turns to God. He turns his focus to God. He draws strength from God. And he does that before he does anything else. Before he defends himself before his men, before he starts blaming anyone else, before he even starts to ask the question, okay, is this something I should try to change or is this something I can't fix? What do I do here? Before any of that, first and foremost, he grabbed hold of God. And because he did, he was strengthened. I want to encourage this in us. When we go through dark times, when we face the unacceptable, that we grab hold of God before we rush into fix-it mode, before we try to accuse ourselves or God or anyone else, before we try to decide, should I try to fix this or is this one of those things that I just have to accept and live my life with, before we do any of that, that first and foremost, when the unacceptable happens, we fasten ourselves to God, we grab hold of him and hold on for dear life tenaciously, stubbornly, and we draw strength from him, and that we do that before we do anything else. This is one of the things, holding on to God, giving our focus and our attention to Him. This is one of the things that happens when we genuinely enter in to worship. Now, worship is not about us. It's about God. But there are some things that happen in our lives when we truly worship God too. There's some benefit that happens in our lives when we truly worship. And when I say truly worship, I don't just mean just singing the songs without really thinking about what we're singing. I'm not talking about just mindlessly repeating lyrics that we're familiar with. I'm not talking about being distracted while worship is going on and doing and thinking about other things. I'm talking about with all of our hearts, throwing ourselves into worship with abandon, setting aside every other distraction and giving ourselves over to God and entering into His presence. When we do that, what we are doing is we are refocusing away from me and everything happening in my life, and I'm refocusing on His power, His presence, His love, His goodness, His faithfulness with me, His work in my life. That's what worship does. When we look at worship instead of just saying, well, it's kind of filler, you know, before the service, to make the service last an hour. It's kind of a thing that just kind of leads up to the sermon, and oh, I like this song, I don't really like that song. I wish we'd say, when we put all that aside and just allow the music, the songs, the words, the message of that music to draw us into God, it changes everything. It changes our perspective because genuine worship reminds us of who God is. And in worship, what we are doing is this. We are grabbing hold of God and we are refocusing on Him and saying, God, You are mighty, You are good, You are faithful, You are loving, You are here, You are bigger than this. God, You are with me. And so I want to encourage you, when we come together to worship, don't allow yourself to be distracted. Don't just sit by passively. Don't just sit back with your arms folded and just kind of let the music go. Engage. Because when we don't engage, we are missing out on something God could be doing in our lives. Worship is meant to refocus us on Him. And when we do, we draw strength from Him because we are fastening ourselves to Him. Worship does that in our lives. Prayer does that also. You see, when we pray, we are centering our focus on the fact that God is a loving Father. Remember in the Lord's Prayer, Jesus taught us, He said, pray this way, our Father in heaven. Our Father in heaven. Our Father means He loves us, He cares about us. In heaven means He is mighty and He is bigger than whatever problems we are facing. See, there's no need you'll ever face that is too small for Him to care about. And there's no problem you'll ever face that's too big for Him to handle. When we pray, we are turning our focus to Him. And we are reminding ourselves, when we go to Him and talk with Him about what's happening in our lives, we are reminding ourselves that He is a loving Father, that the God of the universe cares about me, cares about what matters to me, that the God of all creation invites me to talk to Him about the stuff that's happening in my life, and it matters to Him. And He says to come before Him boldly. That's amazing. And so what we do is we turn to God, we grab hold of Him, we hold on to Him for dear life. And in worship, we turn to God and say, God, You are mighty. And in prayer, we turn to God and say, God, I need You. David strengthened himself in the Lord, and he did that before he did anything else. Before he made any decisions, he turned to God first. See, there's a danger in making especially big decisions when we are at the bottom. When we're not in a good place emotionally and spiritually, we tend to make bad decisions. I remember hearing John Maxwell talk about this years ago. He said, have you ever noticed how some people, it seems like every decision they make is the right decision, and some people, it seems like every decision they make is the wrong decision? Why is that? And he said, one of the reasons is those who tend to make the wrong decision, it's because of where they are in life when they make those decisions. Because they make those decisions in a moment of crisis when they haven't had a chance to think through the long-term impact of those decisions. When we are not in a good place spiritually or emotionally, what we tend to do is we make our decisions based on the situation I'm in right now without thinking through what's going to happen as a result of this decision. So it's the person that says something like this, my job is terrible. I hate my job, can't stand my boss, can't stand my coworkers. I'm done. I'll just do something else, anything else. I don't care where it is. I don't care what I do. I will take any other job just to get me out of this job. Some of you have said that, right? And what happens is this, when we say those kind of things, I will do anything else just to get me out of this job, we end up grabbing onto something else that we think is better, and the only reason we think it's better is because we're way down here, and we're not seeing the bigger picture. And so as a result of that, we end up, instead of looking for what's best, we settle for whatever seems like it's a little bit better than what we have right now. Is this making sense? So it's the person that goes from job to job to job to job, and they're never happy because they're making a decision not out of emotional strength and health, but out of crisis. It's the person that is in and out of multiple relationships. As soon as one relationship is over, they immediately find another one. Why? Because they're making a decision not in a place of health. When we are not doing well emotionally or spiritually, we make decisions not out of wisdom, but out of pain. And the result of those decisions is that we're not making a decision looking for what's best in our lives. We make the decision just to get rid of the pain, alleviate the pain I have right now without thinking through what's this going to look like 6 months from now, a year from now? What's the long-term impact of this decision going to be? That's what happens when we make rash decisions without pausing. And that's why David, it says, first of all, before he decided, before he did anything else, first of all, he refocused his mind, his attention, his thoughts on the presence and the power of the living God. That's a really important first step, that we fasten ourselves to him and draw strength from him before we do anything else. After he does that, he asks a really important question. Look at verse 8. It says, then David asked the Lord, should I chase after this band of raiders? Will I catch them? And the Lord told him, yes, go after them. You will surely recover everything that was taken from you. What's interesting is you don't have David doing the William Wallace thing from Braveheart, right? You don't have him like Mel Gibson going out there with his face painted blue and riding back and forth on the horse in front of his men and giving this inspiring speech and will you fight? You don't have him doing that. He kind of does the opposite here. He takes a step back and he bows before God and he says, God, what are you saying here? What's your plan here? What do you want me to do? Now, that might seem surprising because at this point, David is a seasoned warrior. He has a lot of victories under his belt. He is feared by his enemies, so it would make sense for him to rally the troops and rush into battle. But he doesn't do that. Instead, he goes to God and asks the question, should I go to battle? And the reason he asked the question is because he understood God had something to say about that. Whatever you're going through right now, whatever you're facing, God has something to say about that too. Are you asking him the question? See, I think what we tend to do is we tend to go to God and we say, okay, God, I've done all the hard work here. I figured out the plan. I know what needs to happen here. So here's my plan, God. Now I just need you to make it work, right? Here's what I need you to do for me, God. Here's, you know, I put a lot of thought into this. This is the best possible option. So here it is. Just, you know, wave your magic God wand and make miracles happen and fix the problem. Make it happen the way I want it to. Right? Am I the only one? We do that, don't we? And what David did is the exact opposite. Instead of saying, God, here's the plan, he says, God, what's your plan? Instead of saying, God, here's what I want you to do, he says, God, what do you want me to do? What are you saying about this? And then he listened and God gave him a response. Now over the next few verses, what happens is really interesting through this really odd, unusual, what seems like a coincidence, but it's not when God's involved, this unusual twist of events that happens, God brings them victory. And the way this all falls into place, it makes it really clear if David had rushed into battle, it wouldn't have turned out the same way. But because he took a step back, turned his focus on God, asked God the question, and listened, the timing was exactly right and everything worked out the way it was supposed to. And so we jump down to verses 18 and 19, and here's what it says. David got back everything the Amalekites had taken. And he rescued his two wives. We'll talk about that another time. Nothing was missing, small or great, son or daughter, nor anything else that had been taken. David brought everything back. Everything he lost was regained. Nothing was left behind. Isn't that the way we all want our stories to turn out? And I think David's response to this is really important for us to learn from. So what can we learn here? Sometimes we can change what has happened in our lives, and sometimes we should. Sometimes when the unacceptable happens, the best response is not to accept it, but to go to war to change it. Now, it's really important for us to know when to do that, right? Like that last part of the Serenity Prayer, give me the wisdom to know the difference. How do we do that? How do we discern? We do it by asking the question. Before we do anything else, before we defend ourselves, before we accuse anyone else, before we put together our plans and decide, should I accept this or should I try to change this? Before we do any of that, first of all, we turn our focus to God. We grab hold of him and we hold on and refuse to let go. We give him our full attention. And then we ask him, okay, God, you have my attention. What do you want me to do with this? And then we listen, because he has something to say to us. As we close out this series today, I want to end by sharing a story of a man who learned how to strengthen himself in the Lord. This is a story from several years ago. This man was a very wealthy lawyer who lived in Chicago. He was highly successful and had several lakefront properties that he owned. He and his wife, Anna, had 5 kids. 4 daughters and 1 son. And when you look at their story, it's very similar to Job's story. When their son was only 4 years old, he was infected with scarlet fever and died suddenly. A year after that, massive fires swept through Chicago, and almost every building he owned was destroyed. He lost most of his wealth literally overnight. A couple of years after that, as a family, they planned a vacation. This is in the days of steamships. They were going to get on a steamship and go across the Atlantic to spend some time in England. Because of some issues that happened in his business, he had to stay behind, and his plan was to go and catch up with them later on. His wife and 4 daughters went on ahead. Within a couple of days of them leaving, he received a telegram from her with these words, "Saved alone." There had been a terrible accident. Another boat had struck their boat, and within just 12 minutes, the boat sank 3 miles to the bottom. All 4 daughters were lost in that accident. His wife was one of the few survivors, and she was found unconscious, floating on a piece of wood. He immediately left everything and got in the next ship to go across to be with his wife, and it was during that voyage across the Atlantic, in 1873, that a grieving husband named Horatio Spafford began to write a worship song. He asked the captain of the ship to share with him, to let him know when they got to the area where the boat had gone down. And as they were crossing over the waters that had claimed the lives of his 4 daughters, he began to write the timeless words to this song. "When peace like a river attendeth my way, when sorrows like sea billows roll, whatever my lot, you have taught me to say, it is well with my soul." How do you say that in the middle of tragedy? How do you have that kind of strength when things have gone so horribly wrong? This is a man who learned to strengthen himself in the Lord, who learned what it means to grab hold of God and refuse to let go. Our closing song is going to be an updated version of this song. And we're going to sing it as a reminder to us that even in the darkest of times, God is still faithful. He is still with us. And he is still our strength when we have no strength left. Let's stand together and let's sing it as well. Just like Job's story, this story has another chapter to it. The story of Horatio and Anna Spafford. After this tragedy happened, she shared that one day, in the middle of her grief and despair, she heard a still small voice whisper to her, "You were saved for a purpose." Over the next few years, together they had three more kids. They moved to Jerusalem, and they spent the rest of their life together in Jerusalem, feeding the hungry, caring for the sick, and providing homes and clothing and food for orphaned and homeless children. Sometimes in the face of the unacceptable, God calls us to do something. So let's turn to Him. Let's grab hold of Him and let's listen. Because whatever you're going through right now, He has something to say to you. So God, I pray that You will help us to be sensitive to Your voice. Father, that in the middle of the trials, in the middle of the struggles, in the middle of the unacceptable, that we would not try to fight back on our own strength, that we would not rush to try to fix what we can't fix, but also that we wouldn't just sit by passively. God, teach us to fasten ourselves to You, to grab hold of You and refuse to let go. Teach us to ask You, God, what are You saying here? What are You asking me to do? And teach us to listen to Your voice and to walk in obedience to You. Father, I pray for anyone here right now who is going through a time in their life where it is really hard to say it is well. Your word tells us that You are the God of comfort and peace. Your word tells us that You are close to the brokenhearted. And so God, I pray that that will be their experience. That they will know You as the God who is there. As the God who has never abandoned them. And God, we do ask that You would act on our behalf and bring healing and restoration. And we thank You for Your faithfulness to us. In Jesus' name, amen.